one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Phillies. I mean, it's what we do here every week. We on the round table, we talk about the Phillies. We talk about this baseball team, and I don't know how many of you want to listen. Some people love to hate listen when the team is going bad, and I'm with you on that. I do too. I think this is a good place for us all to gather together to share our feelings about the baseball team that we had high expectations for coming into the season. And so far here in April, definitely the Phillies falling on their faces so far. But we will get into the Braves series. We're going to talk about Rob Thompson's comments after the game. Article by Ken Rosenthal from The Athletic out here on Monday talking about Thompson and a couple other managers already, possibly potentially on the hot seat and what could happen after that. But we will also, I heard Justin and Liz dipped in on the Mets a little bit on the last podcast. The woes continue in New York. I mean, it's hard to really enjoy it right now with what's going on in Philadelphia. But we'll talk about the Mets as well. Lots of stuff to get to here on this roundtable edition of the podcast. I'm joined by Justin Clue and Liz Rocher, of course. Liz Rocher is the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. You can follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, how you doing? Going on a Monday?
I'm doing my best not to think about the Phillies, and this whole podcast thing is really, really putting a damper on that.
It's getting in the way. It's getting in really the way getting of in the ignoring way. The Phillies. It really is, yep. Yes.
And honestly, if that's what you have to do right now, do it. I have to do it sometimes, some moments, some entire days of this weekend.
Yeah. Everybody needs a little brain cleanse. Yeah, it's a cleanse. It's like doing a cleanse, no doubt about it. But not for the next hour
toxins,
or so.
And we must get rid of them.
That's right. Right now they are. That is 100% the case. Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus also with us here on the roundtable. You can follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. Justin also hosts a couple of Phillies podcasts over at the Patreon, Absolutely Hammered and The Dirty Inning. He's also the author of the book Over My Shoulder right here, A Summer of the Cheap Wieners. You can get that at brooklinebooks.com. Justin, your intro gets longer every episode, but I'm happy to do it. How are you, buddy?
Notness. Yeah. I can't remember the last time Let's Go Flyers chant broke out at a Phillies game.
But oh, yeah.
Here we are.
It might have been in the 70s.
Late April. And Phillies got two playoff teams, and Phillies don't look like one of them yet. So, yeah.
Well, neither do the Sixers, to be fair.
Well, to be fair. Yeah. Anybody watched that game? Good Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hot moment right now. I saw that they tried to run that graphic up on Sunday Night Baseball last night, where it was like, so Philadelphia, city of playoffs, where it's got like the Eagles and the Sixers and the Flyers and the Phillies. And you're like, yeah, I guess it is, huh? It wasn't like, oh, yeah, we're the champs now. Look out, Boston. It was like, yeah, oh, right. I guess all those things are true now.
I'll tell you what would be the height of that humor. The height of humor would be if all four Philadelphia sports teams are in the postseason and the only team to actually win a playoff series is the Flyers. Right?
Philadelphia might disintegrate.
That's looking pretty likely right now.
Honestly, it really is. Whoo boy.
Well, I mean, obviously, we're talking about the beatdown the Atlanta Braves gave the Phillies over the weekend. Citizens Bank Park, another home series loss for the Phillies, and it was ugly. All three games were ugly. The first one on Friday night, 9-0, was just about as bad a baseball game as you could ever attend. Taijuan Walker, of course, was prominently involved, which, not surprising there. But the bats, again, go cold and go silent. And then on Friday, the team loses 3-1 to the Braves. One run scored by the Phillies in that one on the Felix Reyes home run. So the new kid is the only one. Otherwise, they would have been shut out in back-to-back games for the second time this year. And then the Phillies give up three unearned runs on Saturday night on that one. So I said Friday night, but 3-1 on Saturday night, pardon me. And then on Sunday Night Baseball, watched by dozens across the country on Peacock, the Braves outscore the Phillies 4-2, and it's scoring all four runs in, what was it, the fourth inning. Andrew Painter gets knocked out early. And then Tim Mizea. The Tim Mizea time was fun for a little while, wasn't it, guys? That was a good time for just a spell. But the Braves outscored the Phillies 16-3. In the three-game series. The Phillies have lost five in a row,
and 9 out of 11, losing all three home series over here over the course of these last 9 games. And I want to get into this in just a second. I want to talk about, you know, what the offense and pitching and all that was doing. First, I want to play a couple of sound bites from NBC Sports Philadelphia. Kyle Schwarber after the game talking about how the players are reacting to this, the frustration. Schwarber, of course, runners on first and second, bottom of the ninth, trailing by 2 outs, hits a rocket to right field that somehow finds Ronald Acuna Jr.'s glove. A lot of frustration, slamming the helmet down on the ground. So Kyle Schwarber talked about it a little bit after the game, the frustration that the players are feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just like, yeah, I mean, you know, you gotta, obviously, sure, there's frustration, but, you know, I think you just kind of, you know, there, you can only kind of just grin at it too, right? It just is what it is. And, you know, there's everyone in the dugout is, you know, everyone in the locker room, you know, we're all putting in the work, we're all doing what we need to do. You know, we want to keep getting better. And, you know, results, you know, chasing a result, chasing hits, chasing all that. That's, you know, not the way to go about it. The way that, you know, I feel like on a daily basis, see the guys in here and the way that they're working. It's, you know, it's inevitable. It's inevitable. At some point, it's going to change. And, you know, we always talk about the sense of urgency. The sense of urgency is there. Everything's there. The wants there. The desire's there. The will. And we all believe. You know, we all believe in ourselves at the end of the day. You know, there's no doubt in that. And, take it on the chin and keep moving.
Yeah, take it on the chin and keep moving. That's Kyle Schwarber. And then Rob Thompson, also NBC Sports Philadelphia, in his post-game press conference on Sunday night, I thought sounded pretty forceful in what he had to say.
A lot of frustration. You know, we're disappointed. We're frustrated. I know they're trying hard, sometimes trying too hard. So, you know, but yeah, I think guys are upset. You know, we're off to a slow start here, but it's going to get better.
How do you stay even keel and positive during these type of stretches?
That's my job. You know, there are times when you have to straighten some people out, and we've, in a way, we've done that. But, you know, for the most part, you got to stay positive, and you got to believe in the club because there's talent here. It's not that we don't have talent. We've got talent. It just hasn't happened yet, but it's going to happen. Everybody's frustrated. I'm telling you. Nobody's complacent. Everybody's working their tails off. Nobody's happy. We're not used to this. We're not. So, like I said, we've got to play better.
Is it harder to get out of that over-aggressive mode when the team maybe feels like they need to make something happen with the stretch you're in?
Well, I mean, that's what you got to do as a professional. You got to take the emotion out of it. And this isn't football. It's not hockey where emotion can help you. In this sport, over emotion can often hurt you. You got to take it out of it.
Interesting comments there from both Kyle Schwarber and Rob Thompson after the game. Justin, just I thought, well, give me your thoughts on what those guys had to say.
Well, Kyle Schwarber sounds like a man who's tired of answering questions and probably tired of answering the same questions. And after a game like that, where he did what he was supposed to do and he hit the ball the way he should hit it and Ronald Acuna tracked it down, you're just kind of like, look, I'm doing the right thing. We're waiting this out, is the general belief, is that we have to wait for more time to go by for some of this stuff to get worked out of our system, because I know I got some stats I want to share, but I'm going to wait because I think we're going to have a special place for stats from this stretch right now.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm not going to like point at the peripherals and going like, the underlying stats. But obviously, you know, some of that exists. And even just eyeball test, you can see moments like the end of that game and Kyle Schwarber's ball, like, That is something that is happening very frequently for this team as well. So when you feel like you're doing things correctly and you're just suffering through a ton of bad luck, there really is nothing other to do other than, like, you know, go to the mic and say like, hey, sorry, this might also happen tomorrow, but all we're going to tell you is that we're going to keep doing positive things and we're not feeling negative things. I can't assure you enough how these guys aren't complacent. You know, don't think about that at all. I can't tell you enough how these guys are like, no, they need to play better, because that's all you can say. Now, the other half of that is sometimes it's not bad luck. Sometimes this team just isn't playing well. And I said this in the last episode, it just feels genuinely shocking coming off a 6-week stretch where the whole point is to get into playing shape. And these guys look in some games like, you know, they just skipped that part, or maybe we're still in week one of spring training. So that's the more shocking part. That's the stuff that's got to get completely worked out. And unfortunately, that's the stuff that's more likely to still be here in August. You just got to hope when they shed this like truckload of bad luck they've got right now, that the good version of the Phillies is able to come through a little more clearly. And you're just hearing that exasperation, I think, in both these guys' quotes. Rob Thompson isn't going to change his mood level. I don't think we're ever going to get a Rob Thomas press conference where he rips his shirt off and like throws it at a reporter and like kicks the podium down and walks out of the room. It's always going to be a very even keeled, totally, you know, like monotone in general approach. And that's his approach. And that's how it's going to go. So if that kind of thing infuriates you, get ready to call for him to be fired a bunch over the next few months, because that's just how he's going to do it. And, you know, it used to work. I guess the doubt is starting to arise that this is still the right approach for this team that has, you know, you can say that they're not complacent. Well, sometimes they really look that way.
Yeah. Liz, your thoughts on Thompson and Schwarber?
I mean, everyone sounds tired, as Justin said, of it. You know, the reporters aren't thrilled to be having to watch the same bad baseball that everyone else is. You know, they're not thrilled to have to ask the same questions because they're going to get the same answers, because there are no answers. It's, we are good players and together we know we could be a good team, but that is not happening right now despite everything we're doing. And we've had this conversation in multiple years. It's like you just have to wait it out, and that's what they have to do. Unfortunately, there are only a handful of ways you could say that, and they've used all of them. And so now they're cycling back through all of the different ways to say that. And we're like, hey, this is just the same. We're like, yeah, because it is the same as it was like 2 weeks ago when we were waiting for it to, you know, something to wake up. We're just here waiting until it happens. It's really the worst. It's like, you think of like waiting for Christmas and you've got a definite countdown. Now you're hoping that something will happen because you don't know for sure, but it's really, really likely. So this is like one of the most uncomfortable parts of the season. This is worse to me than like the lead up. I mean, the playoffs and the lead up to the playoffs are a different type of bad, but this is a type of bad where you're super concerned all the time that this is just who they are this year.
Right. That's what I was going to say. The darker place to take this is that, yeah, you're getting asked during a rough stretch the longer it goes on. Like, hey, how long is this going to go on? And they're like, we know we're good. But then the longer it goes on, the question becomes, but are you good? Right. You know, and the Phillies have a couple of guys where that's potentially a question.
Yeah. Well, and that's why Phillies fans are in the mixer right now, because we've been through this with both scenarios. I mean, a lot of the different things we're seeing with this bad homestand and stuff, that Phillies did things similar to this in 2009, which is a season when they went to the World Series. We've had slow starts to the season, and then the Phillies go to the World Series. We've had fast starts to the season, and we see the season fall apart. Like, you don't know where this is all heading. Guys, you know, Alec Bohm last year got off to a brutal start and then hit over 300 over the last 3.5 months of the season. Bryson Stott was awful for the first 2.5-3 months of the season and was excellent after that. You know, and it's the calling card of this team is inconsistency. And I think, you know, certainly as fans, we've seen both things. So there's nothing, if history is our guide, history is schizophrenic. I mean, it's all over the place with regards to this team. And I will say too, with the advent of 3 wild cards, it is so much easier to struggle early in the season, in massive struggles early in the season, and then figure it out over the last 4 months, get one of the wild cards and go on a run. That's how the Phillies did it in 2022, for crying out loud. So, I mean, it's, you know, we've been talking a lot the last couple of years. They won the division. Maybe the bye was, maybe they'd do better if they had momentum playing a wild card round, so they get a couple of easy playoff wins under their belt and then can build on that. Well, this is how that would happen then. You fall 6.5 games behind the Braves early and you struggle to catch up. Now you're playing for a wild card. You know, but it never feels good in the moment when the struggles are happening, and we can't know, like, is this going to be like 2022? The Phillies got off to a slow start in 2023 as well. Those seasons ended up pretty successfully, I think. You know, 23 obviously was a real bummer, but, you know, at the end of the day, they got within 1 win of a World Series. Or is it 2012? Is it the year when Zach Wheeler never gets healthy and you're looking at a Roy Halladay 2012 season for Zach Wheeler? Not that his career is going to be over or anything, but just a down year from your ace when you recover from it. You know, you get guys who are, you know, on the tail ends of their careers, like Chase Utley fading, Ryan Howard fading, Jimmy Rollins fading, not bad players yet, but not great players anymore. And then you have the rest of the guys, you know, some you're sprinkling some young guys in who are being kind of productive, but they're not replacing, you know, the mainstays that you had, like Stott and Bohm and some of these guys, and a new guy like Adolis Garcia, who's been awful so far here. Like, you just don't know. And that's where Phillies fans are right now. We are in the cement mixer right now, waiting it out, and being pretty grumpy as a result of it, because this is not fun. No one wants to watch this. And the Phillies don't want to play like this. And that's what really, I thought Rob Thompson's comments, they were calm and they were measured, but you can tell that the clubhouse is upset. You can tell that he's upset about this. And that's about as much emotion as you're going to see out of Rob Thompson at a post-game press conference. I felt like you could hear the emotion in there. Like, the frustration is really there. They don't know why they're not hitting. They don't know why they're not playing that well right now.
And they probably know, like, for whatever the reason is, regardless of what it is, they're entering the space where the conversations have started about people losing their jobs. And when, you know, that's when you enter that phase of a struggle, then yeah, the mood only gets more grim.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because Ken Rosenthal on Monday wrote about three managers who could be on the hot seat, three teams that were supposed to be very good that have gotten off to very slow starts. Alex Cora of the Red Sox, Carlos Mendoza of the Mets, and of course, Rob Thompson of the Phillies. Talking specifically about Thompson, Rosenthal wrote, "Projecting calm is one of Thompson's strengths, and the team in December extended him through 2027, partly with that in mind. But owner John Middleton is sensitive to fan reaction, and Dombrowski has shown he will not hesitate to act if he believes a change is necessary." By the way, we need to stop talking about what Dave Dombrowski will do based on what he's done in the past. He's a different baseball head now. Different guy totally. Anyway, Rosenthal goes, go ahead, Justin, yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask you, sorry, we're in the middle of this, but how close to Dombrowski's vision do you feel this team is? Like, I'm sure he would say, well, it's like an evolving thing based on what's available. But like, going into 2026, how he envisioned this team based on what we know has happened, is this the team he like expected to be putting on the field? You could go back to the Bo Bichette thing and a change he tried to make there. You could go back to saying Harper isn't elite and going back to like that, creating a ripple effect of problems through the roster. Like, do you think this team is close to what he imagined at this point would be on the field for the Phillies?
I think if he could have waved his magic wand, I think Alec Bohm would be playing somewhere else. I think he would have figured out something for third base. I think he might have wanted to spend more in the outfield than Adolis Garcia would be my guess. Like, if he had an unlimited payroll, I'm guessing a better outfielder would be in Philadelphia. But I think the rest of the roster largely is kind of how he wants it. I mean, he wanted Trey Turner. Mm-hmm. He wanted Kyle Schwarber. He wanted Bryce Harper. Exactly. all the big names, you know, he signed Lizardo to an extension. He signed Christopher Sanchez to another extension. He signed Aaron Nola to a long-term contract. So outside of some of the guys on the periphery a little bit, and, you know, guys like Bohm and Stott, who you could potentially move, but either couldn't or didn't this offseason, I think largely, yeah, this is kind of the team that I think maybe if he might have wanted to have one more star in there, you know, maybe. But other than that, yeah, I think this is the girl he wanted to bring to the dance.
Yeah. I mean, and his talk of like bringing in getting young players into the mix more, I think got kind of amplified after the Bichette thing fell apart, but that also had to be a part of the plan from the get-go. And I think he knew that, which is why he didn't come in and Dave Dombrowski those guys, you know, straight to Detroit for somebody else at some point.
Liz, what do you think?
I think it is mostly the team that he wanted to put on the field. Like, it's hard to argue because this is the team he put on the field. You know, he doesn't have a lot of, I mean, to be fair, he doesn't have a lot of options. He doesn't have a lot of options because he has a lot of long-term deals that he himself have made.
And right, so by his own design.
Exactly. That's kind of what I mean. Like, it's an obvious thing to say, but he created this team himself for the most part, like with the exception of like maybe Real Muto and Harper and Nola. Like a lot of guys have come on board since he came here. This is his team now. This is not, there's almost no Matt Klentak left in this team. And so, like, this is his. This is, if this is not the roster he wanted to put out, there's a lot of explaining to do.
Well, yeah. I mean, he could have maybe been more aggressive in the offseason with trading players away, and maybe you don't get maximum value for them, but you feel like you got to change the culture and mix up of the team. Could have replaced the manager. Honestly, this offseason, he could have replaced Rod. I think there was a very real thought, I mean, in our minds that, yeah, we could see that kind of a move being made, and he didn't. He decided to keep Rob Thompson. And one of the things that Ken Rosenthal talks about in his story is, you know, the Phillies won 95 and 96 games the last two seasons. This is what Rosenthal is writing, with essentially the same cast. Like the Mets, the Phillies are talented enough to snap out of it. But if they don't, they could replace Thompson with their first-year bench coach Don Mattingly, who previously managed the Dodgers and the Miami Marlins. And it's not known whether Mattingly would want the job. His son Preston is the Phillies' general manager, of course, creating a potentially awkward situation. Thompson's staff includes other possible replacements, starting with third base coach Dusty Wathan. Now, this is not a Rob Thompson. This is a Rosenthal speculation piece, if you're asking me. I don't know that he's hearing anything. This feels more like a Rosenthal speculation piece, Liz. But how much... The fact that this is out there now, and Ken Rosenthal knows that when he puts something out there like this, then now people are going to talk about it, talk about the possibility, like we're doing. And, you know, maybe the conversations are being had in more serious circles someplace. How much rope do you think Rob Thompson has with the Phillies? Like, if you could, given the fact Joe Girardi got fired, what, 50-some-odd games into the 22 season, how much rope do you think Rob Thompson has with these guys?
Oh, I think with the Phillies... I'll admit him not being extended till December did give me some pause, because I'm like, what are they working out here? Because this seems like if they love him, this is a no-brainer. He won 95 and 96 games over the past, you know, 3 years, and it's firing a manager like that seems insane. I mean, it seems bonkers because there are results, and we're all reacting to this micro part of this season. But, you know, he has as much rope as he wants, I think. I don't think the Phillies are in a hurry to get rid of him. I mean, just like they just said, like Middleton, they just gave him an extension. This isn't the Girardi situation. He's very friendly with the Phillies. They have a good relationship. It doesn't seem like it has ever been adversarial, which definitely was not the case with Girardi. You could just tell. So I don't think he goes anywhere. I think this is just something that people are talking about because it's something to talk about. Because there's nothing else this team can do. Changing the manager is the one thing that people go to. You change the staff. Sometimes it works, but I feel like a lot of times just you change managers on a sinking ship. The 22 Phillies at that point were a sinking ship. At this moment, this is not a sinking ship. This is so early in the season. And even if they don't hit, I don't see how you could blame that on Rob Thompson. I mean, he can move the lineup around as much as he wants, but that's not going to make him hit. He has no magic wand to point at them and say hit.
Well, I don't think you can... Obviously, he can't make anybody hit, but I think the issue with Thompson isn't so much that the players aren't executing fundamentals. It's more that there doesn't seem... It is such a players-friendly environment that there's not enough accountability when guys are dragging, guys make mistakes. The Rob Thompson critics are saying that, like, yeah, perhaps that environment has simply run its course. I mean, you kind of can watch teams over the years go from a manager who's like... laid back and the players love him to like, okay, this guy's a little more stricter and like, you know, veering back and forth from culture to culture, because sometimes this stuff just wears out. And when you're talking about changing the team, yeah, like there's a lot of players locked up here and nobody you're going to be able to break off very easily in via trade, partially because some guys are very entrenched and partially because some guys are just not desirable for other teams. But in either case, yeah, you just kind of you can watch this team and feel like those moments where they look like they're asleep or they're making stupid mistakes, and know that it really takes a lot, that you can name on like one hand the amount of times Rob Thompson has held a player so accountable that they've missed playing time. So that argument I can see having some prescience here in like year five of this, even though every year of his tenure he has taken a team to the postseason. With that being established as the norm, not making the postseason would be viewed as perhaps even more catastrophic than a manager who had not made the postseason before. So I feel like this could wind up having more appeal for the Phillies should this continue to spiral. And it would probably, like, if things continue plummeting, I'm not saying they definitely will, but like before the end of the first half, I think as far as like how much rope Rob Thompson has, probably more than fans would want to give him, but less than the Phillies might be able to give him if this continues. I think this is the change they start looking at making.
I mean, if they're still well under 500 by the end of May, I don't see this continuing. I just don't. I mean, and the fact that they only gave him a 1 year extension, it's just enough of an extension for Rob Thompson to feel like he's not a lame duck, but it's not a commitment. It is far from a commitment to Rob Thompson. And I don't know that Don Mattingly's the right answer or Dusty Wathan's the right answer. I mean,
listed several candidates for Mendoza, but when it came for the Phillies, as far as who would be the next person, it was only Don Mattingly, which is the only name you've really heard because they brought him in and it seemed like they were parking him behind him for that role. And now here's Rosenthal's like, who would replace him? Just this guy. Not like the list the other two jobs got as potential replacements.
That's right. And I guess he's enough of from the outside because he just got here that it could actually maybe be a different voice. Or maybe Don Mattingly's the reason all this is happening, guys. Have we thought about that?
We need to discuss this on a future episode.
Yeah, I think where's the think piece on that one, friends?
Don Mattingly, Adolis Garcia, and Dylan Moore are taking down the Phillies from the inside. It's the only answer.
It's an inside job.
We need Matt Gelb investigative reports.
All right. So I have a few statistics here that I sent to you guys on a show sheet, and they're all very bad. And I can run them all down, but I want to ask you to offer what is your favorite terrible statistic about the Phillies so far. I bullet pointed, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I've got 8 of them here. And we can run them down. I could read them all down, but I thought it might be fun. Why don't you guys, give me what you think is your favorite terrible stat about the Phillies here so far in 2026, and then I can read whatever you guys don't choose.
All right.
Go ahead, Liz.
I mean, I'll go first. I hate that the first one stuck out to me, but I remember the 2015 season really, really, really well. I think I watched probably 155 games that season. And I was way into it for reasons even I don't know, because they lost 99 games.
They did.
The fact that this is the worst start since then is really sticking out to me because, man, I have never been so intensely interested in a team that was so bad it didn't deserve my attention. And I would like for that to I'm very worried about that happening this year, because in 2015, I was just writing about the Phillies. I don't believe were we podcasting about them yet?
I had just started solo potting. That was it. Yeah.
Some of us were, but I mean, yeah. I was not. I didn't have to force myself to talk about them twice a week. So I feel like this is just going to be, if this keeps on going, this is going to be one of the worst seasons we've experienced in a while. I'm just desperate for them to turn it around. Good God.
Yeah. Good stat. Yeah, the Phillies 8-13 record, their worst start since 2015 when they lost 99 games under Ryan Sandberg and Pete McCannon. Justin, what is your favorite? And it doesn't have to be one of the ones I listed. If you've got another stat that you found that is your favorite, please do.
It's good, because I brought up some of my own stats from home.
Justin's got receipts. All right, let's do it.
Some of these are just going to kind of zig back and forth a little bit here, because this is a weird team going through a weird time. The Phillies are hitting .225 with runners on base. That is the second lowest in the National League. They have a 29.9% hard hit rate with runners on base. That is the second lowest, softest, I guess, in the National League. The Phillies have the 10th highest OPS with runners in scoring position in baseball.
Wait a minute.
Would you be surprised to learn that? 754.
No, but
they have.
There's
they
a have stat the, on John's list that it's.
They
no.
have the second. They have the second highest line drive percentage with runners in scoring position in baseball, 26.1%. Yeah, the Phillies have the second highest line drive percentage with bases loaded in all of baseball at 41.7%. They are 22nd in hard hit balls at 25%. Did you hear those two things back
so,
to back?
So soft line drives, is that what we're talking about?
They're lofting soft liners almost more than anybody else in baseball. They lead in soft line drives. That is the lamest thing to be leading in baseball. Ah, well, got it over the infield. Ah, I'm nuts. He took two steps back and caught it. Well, back to the dugout.
You were talking about their stats with runners in scoring position. But I'm looking here. No team has had fewer plate appearances with runners in scoring position than the Phillies with 183. My God.
Yeah.
It's all about creating opportunity or not creating opportunity and taking advantage of small sample size. So I'll also point this out. The Phillies have four hits with the bases loaded all season long.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Two for extra bases. They have, two hits or four hits with bases loaded. They have the highest infield hit percentage with the bases loaded in the sport. Does that thrill you?
My
gosh. Most frequent infield hits with the bases loaded. Hooray! The offense is working. They have 10 home runs. Kyle Schwarber has 7 of them. The guy who just got here the other day has another one. Two other home runs have been hit by the Phillies this year.
Bryce has got one of them, right?
Yeah, Bryce has one. Yeah.
Who's got the other one?
I don't know.
Marshawn, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
Opposing hitters are hitting .287 versus Phillies pitchers with runners on base. That is the highest in the National League. They've allowed 99 hits with runners on base. That's fewer than only the Nationals and Astros. They also have the most strikeouts with runners on of any National League pitching staff. So that's a good one. They also have a 9.23 ERA with runners on, which is lower than only the Astros. So, like I said, kind of zigging and zagging over that line a little bit. A little more zagging than zigging, but yeah. Still. A lot of weird stuff to this team. Did I mention the soft line drives?
The soft line drives. You know what?
The if best thing I've ever heard.
Doesn't start giving me a soft line drive rate as an actual statistic, I'm going to have to get my buddy and good friend of the podcast, Mike Petriello, on here and ask him to see if we can't get something like that together. Soft line drive rate, because that is... Limp line drives is what this team specializes in right now.
It's the only stat you don't want to lead in. It's like
it's so appropriate that is. I was like, that's so weird to see those two next to each other. And yeah, that's so natural for this team to be doing that more often than anyone.
I did a story on the Good Fight on Friday talking about the pitching staff's bad luck. And I will say when we're talking about luck. And the issues with this team, it's almost exclusively on the pitching side. I think the pitching side has really been done in by some bad luck. The batting average on balls in play is by far the highest in baseball. And all the other pitching metrics that you would value, strikeout rate, walk rate, hard hit rate, everything else is all right where you want it to be. Now, they have gotten hit hard some, but every pitching staff gets hit hard some. The problem is, you know, other teams have gotten guys on base ahead of those hard hit balls with a lot of bad luck. So I feel like that noise is going to kind of settle down as the season goes along. But just some of the other statistics that I have at my disposal. Some of these are team-wide, and some of these are individual. The Phillies' negative 38 run differential is the worst in baseball. Somehow it's worse than the Mets' negative 25 run differential, and the Mets have lost 11 in a row. Somehow the Phillies' run differential is worse than a team that's lost 11 games in a row and has scored fewer runs than them. Make it make sense. After their 9-0 loss on Friday, it was the first time since 1989 that the Phillies had lost 3 straight home games by 6 or more runs. Now, let me tell you something. There may not be a lot of experts out in the internet world on the 1989 Phillies. I'm one of them. All right. That was one of the worst teams you've ever seen. I went and researched it. I found the three games from 1989. May 16th, 17th against the Giants, and 19th against the Padres. The first game, they lost 13-5 when Mike Maddux, Randy O'Neill, and Gordon Dillard got knocked around for 13 runs. Yes, that's right. You heard me correct. Gordon Dillard, the one and only time he'll be mentioned here on the podcast. They were shut out 6-0 against the Giants. One hit by Human Mountain Rick Rushel, who threw 6 2/3 no-hit innings against them. Rushel was an all-star. Started the National League All-Star game in 1989. By the way, the guy who gave up the Bo Jackson home run in the All-Star game in 1989. Nevertheless, 6 2/3 no-hit innings against a guy like that. Ken Howell gave up 6 runs in 4 innings. And then against the Padres, the Phillies lost 8-2. Ed Whitson of the Padres threw a 123-pitch complete game in which he gave up 10 hits and 2 runs. Apparently, every reliever was unavailable that night for San Diego. Larry McWilliams gives up 6 runs in 4 2/3 innings for the Phillies. So that's the last time the Phillies lost 3 straight home games by 6 or more runs. The Phillies 4-8 hitters in the lineup have a combined OPS of 576. That's 5 guys. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 5 guys with a combined OPS of 576. Adolis Garcia is 5 for his last 39 for a 128 batting average with 15 strikeouts. Alec Boehm is hitting 139 on the season with a 407 OPS. Bryson Stott is hitting 207 with a 511 OPS. And Rafael Marchand has 1 hit this year. He has a home run. An 037 batting average for, and Marchand just seems to find himself up in key situations over and over and over again right now. The Phillies, Liz has her mouth covered, by the way, as she's listening to these statistics. If you're not watching the podcast, she's in utter shock. The Phillies 2-7 homestand is their worst 9-game homestand since going 1-8 in June of 2009, a World Series season. So again, maybe not all is lost. The Phillies have lost 4 home series all season. All this so far this season, they only lost 3 home series all of last year. They've suffered 7 blowout losses. Those are losses of 5 runs or more. That's 1/3 of all of their games this year. They've been blown out in losses. Last year, they had 21 blowout losses total. So they're already 1/3 of the way there, too. And as Justin mentioned, no team in baseball has fewer plate appearances with runners in scoring position. So not only are the Phillies not hitting when they get runners in scoring position, they also never have them.
I want to correct myself. I said Schwarber has 7 home runs out of the 10 they've hit with runners on base. He actually has 4, and it's spread out a little more. But they do have only 10 home runs with runners on base. That part is still accurate.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't know. Marchand, I don't think, had one of those home runs with runners on base. No. I think his was a solo home run.
He did.
Oh, he did. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, the Braves are playing really well. Everybody else in the National League East is under 500 at the moment. And it was a brutal weekend for the Phillies. Couple of positives from the weekend, though. Let's just talk about a couple of nice things that happened. And let's talk about Felix Reyes, right? Mashed in spring training. Really burst onto the scene in the minors last year in Double A Reading. He was never much of a prospect. Never in the Phillies' top 20 or top 30 prospect list. And just started mashing last year. Came to spring training, continued mashing. Started the season here in AAA, mashing. Right-handed power bat, ball explodes off the bat. He swings at everything. Reminds me so much of Michael Franco, this guy. I mean, this guy, the way he looks, the way he swings, his hitting profile, all of it just screams Michael Franco. Now, in 2015, we probably would have been talking about Felix Reyes as the next cornerstone player on the Phillies. We're not really doing that with him now. I think expectations are moderated, but he gets the call up to replace Otto Kemp, the offseason favorite of Dave Dombrowski, the guy we were told was going to be one of the big solutions in the Phillies outfield, right? Otto Kemp already gone. Felix Reyes comes up and in his first plate appearance ever against Chris Sale, hits a home run to right field. The place went crazy. Of course, the Phillies did not ride that momentum any further in that game. That was the only run they scored. But I think it was one of the few fun moments we had in this homestand. I was seeing Felix Reyes come up in his first plate appearance and just continuing to do what he did. And Justin, I want to see more. I don't know how we get him into the lineup more. I mean, he can't play right field. I would say just, man, I don't care if Adolis Garcia never plays another game. This team out, give me Felix Reyes, but he's a left fielder. He's going to be the right-handed platoon for Brandon Marsh, and that's kind of what we're looking at. But he looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, this is a cool update, regardless of context. I mean, you love seeing a guy like this get his chance. This is the guy that Matt Winkelman warned us back in January that, and I'm quoting here, someone is going to fall in love with the way Felix Reyes hits and write a totally irresponsible column about it, and it is going to be wonderful. It is rare to look at the invite list and not have a single problem with, yeah, he's talking about the spring training invite list, but still, that was like, that stuck out to me because I thought for a second I might be that guy. But then, yeah, it turned out it was John. And I think that this is, I mean, in sequences like this, you're just waiting for the turnaround moment where like the Phillies are going to like finally get that juice, something to feed off of and actually start playing better. And it's desperate. The more you try to manifest it, the less likely it becomes. But then in Felix Reyes's debut game, he crushes a homer off Chris Sale and Sanchez comes out and strikes out the next two batters he faces. And you're just like, this is the closest thing this team's had to some of this juice since the season started. Like this might be the game where it turns around. And then it's just Texas leaguers and CNI grounders and bleeders and oopsie daisies and suddenly the Braves have the lead and you're sitting there like staggered that this is the way this is going, especially when no one else scores for the rest of the game pretty much. So no matter what happens with this team moving forward, stuff like this does always even out. This team is probably, I'm going to say, playing its worst baseball of the season, given that bad luck is so heavily involved in their struggles. That being said, in retrospect, it is very unsurprising that these Phillies, in the way they've been playing now, would be impervious to any juice injections from a rookie blasting a home run off a Braves ace or their own starter looking pretty sharp against a rival. You know, they don't look dead when they're playing like that. They look like they're decomposing, and it was a bummer. But in that brief fleeting moment near the beginning of the game, it was like, oh man, we could be back. Felix Reyes gave us the opportunity to be back. They just, you know, blew it.
Well, and as Rob Thompson says, you can't ride emotion, and the Phillies made sure not to do that, Liz. Yeah, even a good emotion, even good feelings. And that's actually not at all true, because the 2022 postseason was all about riding a wave of good feelings and good emotions and all that stuff.
The 2022 season was about riding good emotions. And I feel like that's one of the things that's been taken away. Not taken away, I think they grew out of it. And Thompson's natural, you know, calmness, and I think relative detachment sort of definitely influenced that. But I mean, I noticed that like a few years ago, the things were just not as fun as they were. And I think that's because they're just like, we're keeping it buttoned up. We want to get down to business. And I'm like, that's fine. This is your job. You should do it however you want. But like, it's not an office. Like, it's a workplace, but it's not an office. You can't sit there and just be like, we're coming to work and we're doing it. But like, this is so much different than that. You have to, there has to be more. There has to be emotion and feeling, and it's okay to show it. Like, that's part of the problem I'm having, I guess. They just don't seem to even be showing emotion. And when it is, it's just anger.
Well, they're showing emotion. There's nothing to feel good about. There's no good emotion can show. I think that's part, like when Felix Reyes hit the home run, everybody in the dugout was celebrating. Everybody was excited. Everybody was happy, but then they just got right back into their struggles. I mean, I think, after the Reyes hit, somebody got an extra base hit. And then it was like, you know, every out after that in the game was like a quick 1-2-3 inning. And they just, when you're not hitting well, it's impossible to generate any kind of emotion because you're just going back to the dugout, shaking your head every time, you know, and that's just, it looks like you're giving up, but you can't, like when you're out, you can't, there's nothing to celebrate. There's no emotion to show. And, you know, I feel, even in 2022, that was a bad regular season for a lot of it, especially down the stretch. I mean, I still remember going nuclear on that team after that Cubs series when I thought they'd blown their chance of getting into the playoffs, you know, and it wasn't really wasn't until the playoffs where that team rode a wave. And so, it is a different team. It's different guys. The psychology of this team is totally different now than it was in 2022. Expectations are a bear anytime you have to play with expectations. And these guys have expectations, and nobody was brought in to lighten the load, to lighten the room, to lighten the mood, to remind everybody, you know, we're just stop playing for the World Series in April. It's not just let the game. And that's where I think Rob Thompson is right. Like, stop it. Just play. And it's easy to say.
I know Garrett Stubbs is a good hang and everything, but like, is it really so hard to bring that kind of energy? Like, he wasn't going to be around forever. He was a backup catcher. And I know they didn't undervalue him on that regard at all. They held him in very high esteem and still do. But is it that hard to recreate energy of just of any of that kind? Maybe not even that at that level of intensity that he brought it, like that fun, laid back kind of like, hey, yeah, we're all just buddies playing baseball and we're really good energy. You can't, like, I get that it's not easy to manufacture and chemistry is a really difficult thing to capture, but we're talking about like one guy having a good attitude. Like, is that hard to recreate and then have other guys feed off of, even among veterans in a locker room? Don't they want to root for each other? Like, don't they want to come to work and like look forward to it? Cause they just don't seem like they're doing that.
I feel like my question is that type of emotion welcome in the clubhouse anymore? Is that type of attitude, because it does feel distinctly, quote, non-business, like, I will never know. But I have to wonder if that type of attitude is welcome in the clubhouse anymore, considering that, you know, the guys that are in there have been in there for a while. There's no, this, it's not that it's not fun, but this is, they have a job. It's not just they're playing baseball. They know they need to make the playoffs. And so I have to wonder if that type of attitude is even welcome.
When's the last time a team won a World Series? And I'm not saying you were saying this, Liz, but like a team won a World Series and their reputation is like, yeah, they were very good, but they were all very sad. Oh, they were all very like morose and like bummed out all the time. Like you're standing there after every game saying, we know what we need to do to win and we know what we need to do. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about like hitting and fielding accurately, but I think what you need to be talking about is like, yeah, we all kind of just are like generally bummed out all of the time and we play like it.
You're not going to be a team with that headspace
and win games. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I get it. No, but part of the narrative of the 1980 Phillies was they won the World Series out of spite. And, you know, I don't know that you can do that often, you know,
anymore.
I honestly don't think this team, and I don't know because I'm not on the inside, but I don't think this team would mind or I think this team would welcome those kinds of voices and that kind of energy in the clubhouse. I think these guys have all grown up. I think they've put some of the kind of kid stuff behind them. When you have a team that's getting, now that was one of the things you had hoped that Justin Crawford would bring, that Andrew Painter would bring. But, you know, when you're one of the few rookies, young players on a roster with that many really strong personality veterans, you're not going to make a big change. You know, it takes Jimmy Rollins type personality to make a big change in a clubhouse like that. And those guys are so hard to find. It's why Jimmy Rollins continues to be a celebrity after his playing days, because he just had that. He just has that aura. And Justin Crawford's playing well. Andrew Painter's been mostly pretty good so far, but they're not going to take over the clubhouse and inject it with anything. Adolis Garcia is not doing that. Like, this is Schwarber's clubhouse. This is Harper's clubhouse. This is Real Muto's clubhouse. This is Bohm's and Stott's and all those guys. And for better or worse, they've gotten older. They've grown up, and this is kind of who they are now. And, you know, it served them well in the regular season. It's just when you get the pressure they put on themselves, that's kind of what's happening here. I'll just also mention, you mentioned Christopher Sanchez's good start on Saturday. He should have won the game 1-0, but an error by Edmundo Sosa at second base with two outs led to three unearned runs and a 3-1 loss. But he has a 1.59 ERA on the season still, does Christopher Sanchez, even though he's been a little bit, he hasn't had quite the command that he normally does early in the season, but his stuff is still very good. And he's continuing to pitch really, really well, really well. So that was an encouraging sign. All right, couple other things here before we wrap up. Zach Wheeler made his final rehab start with Reading, and by all accounts, was not a great final rehab start for him. His fastball only sat in the 91 to 92 mile an hour range. He went four innings, gave up six hits, four runs, a walk, four strikeouts, and two home runs. Regardless, everyone acknowledges he's coming up. Now, that was his last rehab start. He's not going to make any more. He will replace Taijuan Walker in the rotation next weekend in Atlanta. Walker will not make his next start. start, but he will pitch this week. I believe it's in Chicago against the Cubs. The Phillies will use an opener on the day that Walker is supposed to pitch. I believe it's Wednesday, if I'm remembering off the top of my head. So I think something that Zach Wheeler said over the weekend raised an eyebrow. He's like, you know, listen, it's good. There's going to be ups and downs. I just had major surgery. So it's going to kind of, I'm paraphrasing now, but it's going to kind of be, it is what it is. And so Zach Wheeler is not exactly coming to the big leagues brimming with the confidence or the certainty of a top of the rotation type arm. And
this is going great, guys. So everything's fine. Like we need,
yeah. You know, that's why I keep thinking 2012. It's like, man, Roy Halladay, we just kept thinking he was going to figure it out and never did that year. And it feels like this is going to be a year where Zach Wheeler. Right. And his back was broken and everything. And Zach Wheeler looks, by all accounts, is healthy, but he may not be the same pitcher this year. And so that could be a trouble spot.
I think it's really funny that Taijuan Walker is the pitcher he is, and you would never like purposefully put him in a make or break situation. But then every time, you know, the best pitcher in the rotation is out, so Taijuan Walker gets his spot. And now he comes back and he slides into the bullpen and he's technically taking John Duran's spot. And you're like, I know he's not going to come out to close, but right. You know, for the guy you don't want pitching a whole lot, he sure does to get this open spots left by the best players on the team.
Yeah, Duran, by the way, on the injured list with a strained oblique. That was announced this weekend too. And more good news for the Phillies. They've lost their closer for about 15 days or so. Brad Keller will get most. It'll be Brad Keller getting most of the save opportunities, not Taijuan Walker, just so everyone feels better about the whole thing. All right.
I feel great.
Yeah, I feel just tremendous about how things are going. Let's finish up talking a little bit about the Mets. It's hard to enjoy this fully, given the struggles that the Phillies are having right now. But the Mets finished the weekend with 11 losses in a row. They got swept by the Chicago Cubs. It's tied for their longest losing streak since 2004. They are now 7-15 on the season. Talk about offensive struggles. They have been shut out or held to one run 8 times already this year. Francisco Lindor, there's a lot of conversation about him right now. And Liz, let me throw this your way too first, because I mean, he's like making all kinds of mental mistakes in the field, like forgetting how many outs there are, throwing to the wrong bases. He's struggling, like everybody else in that lineup is really struggling at the plate. The final loss on Sunday was a 10-inning, 2-1 loss. Devin Williams blew a save in the ninth. And then Craig Kimbrell gives up a run in the 10th inning for the Mets, leading to their 11th loss in a row, Liz.
Who would have thought that? The Craig Kimbrell on a team in a moment of importance would have given up a run. You get what you get with Craig Kimbrell. We all know that now. I'll admit it is a tiny bit hard to not enjoy, to enjoy this fully, but I'm still enjoying it a lot. You know, I the fact that the Phillies are doing badly does not impact my joy of watching the Mets do worse. That's the thing. If the Mets were just doing bad around the same level of bad as the Phillies, that would be different. But the Phillies, the Mets are doing so much worse. They're just doing so much worse, and things seem a little bit more hopeless, and I enjoy that. I'd like to thank the universe for giving me that, giving all of us that during this difficult time.
Yeah, Justin, you mentioned it when we last spoke, I think on Wednesday, that these two teams went in divergent directions this offseason, two very different paths. And you'd said this, that we would know based on how these teams did, which general manager, David Stearns, who blew up the roster and went a whole different way, or Dave Dombrowski, who stayed the course, which way would be better. And right now the answer is no.
Yeah. It turns out best GM in the NL East, Gabe Kapler. Who would have guessed?
I'm going to throw up.
Yeah. Mets pitchers have a 7.76 ERA with runners on base. As a team, they're hitting .233 with runners on base. That is 8 points higher than the Phillies in that scenario, for the record. They have an OPS of .624 with runners on base. Their team slugging percentage is .323. That is third lowest in baseball. They're bottom four in all major cumulative offensive stats except K percentage, in which they're 11th. So yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say that this is some kind of lesson in things can always be worse. I think now you're kind of watching this ball bounce as well. And now what you don't want is for the Mets to start bouncing back and the Phillies don't. And now there's somebody chasing their tail and catching up with them. And you got that whole dynamic. So as fun as it is and how nice as it is to watch this happen, you have reached a point where you might be looking at the wrong NL East team. If you're still waiting, if you're still like, oh, wow, the Mets blew their chance. Like, look at what the Braves are doing. Like they are. That's who's, I think, now on watch in the NL East. That's your biggest danger. So for now, it's fun to stomp on the Mets' heads. They also might have a bounce back period. You don't want it to be before yours. And you're also probably going to get more trouble from the Braves.
Real quick, what is the most likely scenario with these two teams? Both the Phillies and Mets recover and both make the playoffs. The Mets recover and the Phillies don't, and the Mets make the playoffs. The Phillies recover and the Mets don't, Phillies make the playoffs. Or both of them never recover and both miss the playoffs.
Only one of these scenarios is good.
Only it seems obvious, but I feel like Phillies make it and the Mets don't is a likely scenario there, because I feel like you can point to a lot of stuff that's going on with the Phillies and still see enough positives in enough places to say this is going to even out and we haven't seen this team's true form yet. I'm not saying you've seen the Mets' exact true form, but I think you're learning the ceiling might be a little lower, especially if you're dealing with X factors like Francisco Lindor just kind of playing in a daze of sorts. You know, who knows why that's happening, but that's not exactly something you can cure by going on the injured list. So, yeah, you know, you've already had, and part of this is measuring Mendoza as well. He's had to play most of the season without Juan Soto, which nobody planned for either. So, like, that's going to be a factor for the Mets as well. However, you know, these are it's very easy for Mets fans to look at their team right now, look at the guys they gave up on and the guys who came in and replaced them and go, what happened? Like this could have worked the other way, I guess. And that's the risk you take. So I don't know. I feel like you can say the Mets are starting in a deeper hole and therefore just have less of a chance and a lower ceiling to come back and become a playoff team again.
Liz, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with all that. It would, I mean, it's also the scenario that I would want to happen the most. The Phillies make it and the Mets don't. Nothing feels more right than that. But I agree that it does seem a little bit more likely because the Phillies, I've always thought, have a lot more raw talent. They added Juan Soto, they added Bo Bichette on the Mets, but like, I don't know if that substantially changed their lineup to make it to the level that the Phillies are at when they're actually doing well. You know what I mean? And so I agree that I think the Phillies have a better chance of, you know, bouncing back. But if the Mets start to bounce back first, that's a real disappointment. That'll be tough to watch and see. It'll be tough to surpass, too.
There's a bigger chance that the Mets, I think, do something crazy at the trade deadline. Like, it's more likely that the Mets do like a Tarek Skubal or something, and that changes the landscape as well. I don't think that's going to be what it is, but that's something you hear as a potential. And I think Steve Cohen's more likely to push that button.
Yeah, if Detroit stumbles, if the Tigers are a good playoff team, he's not going anywhere. But yeah, anything could happen in the AL Central for sure. And I agree with you guys. I think it's more likely, based just strictly on the Phillies pitching staff, the strength of their pitching staff, I think it's more likely the Phillies recover and at least grab a wild card spot than the Mets, whose pitching is really thin, more thin than the Phillies. And the Phillies have starting pitching depth issues, no doubt about it. But overall, the arms on the roster are better than what the Mets have. So that's why I like them better as well. All right, let's finish up. By the way, the Phillies are going to start a four-game series against the Cubs in Chicago at Wrigley Field on Monday night, and then they'll be in Atlanta over the weekend for three games. So a game every day for you guys, right? Enjoy it. Four games against the Cubs, three against the Braves. It is fun to watch the Phillies in Wrigley Field. They've been playing well there over the last few years. We'll see if maybe getting away from home for once is what the Phillies need. Let's finish up with some final thoughts. Justin, final thoughts from you?
I've got a feature on Baseball Prospectus today about the Eugene Emeralds. This was a team that saw an attendance jump from like 14 to 68,000. had a new ownership group take over, and they saw that and they said, you know what? We're going for 100,000 fans through the turnstiles this year. And everyone said they were crazy. And it turns out they were. And the story of that season of baseball in Eugene, Oregon is up on Baseball Prospectus today.
Oh, that's a lot of fun. All right, make sure to check that out, everybody. Liz, final thoughts from you?
Turns out they were. Had a final thought, and Justin's excellent final thought has pushed it from my head. It's just another call to everyone to take care of themselves. The Phillies are not your life. They're not our lives. We get paid to talk about them, but they're not our life, despite the amount of merchandise we all own that is at various spots in the shot. So take care of yourselves. Don't watch them if you don't want to. There's lots of better things on. Watch the Flyers. Don't watch the Sixers. Watch the Flyers.
Justin, and read Justin's book.
You don't have to
consume content about the current Phillies. You could consume content about old bad Phillies, which is Justin's screensaver.
We've got to get a graphic made right there for those of you watching.
That way we could know. I think he needs to do that every time we want to promote the book, just have it floating around. That seems like the smartest way to go. But yes, brooklinebooks.com for Justin's book, Summer of the Cheap Wieners. Buy one. I'm just telling you to do it. Buy one.
Yeah.
Buy multiple
books. No reason,
books
just do it.
For your friends and your family members. I'm not going to try to, sweet talk you into this. Buy the book. If you like us, buy the book. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. You can watch our roundtable episodes on the WHYY YouTube channel. So head on over there, subscribe, and you can catch this latest edition, this episode right here. You may have already watched it. If you've watched the whole thing on YouTube, fantastic. We love you. You are a true podcast pal. So thank you for doing that. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Overcast, wherever it is you listen to your podcast, just know that if you want to watch the show, you can do it over there. Tell your friends and family members about the show. We'll watch the Phillies for you, and then you can come and listen to us talk about them if you need a little break, and that's totally understandable. Read Justin at Baseball Prospectus. Check out the Sabre Baseball Research Journal, and you can read my stuff over at The Good Fight as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.